you're going to see us move forward with a completely new proposal, but a more simple proposal.
As the legislative session begins, Governor Parnell talks oil tax reform. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly from Juneau for Tuesday, January 15th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Democrats assess their diminished position as the minority party in both the House and Senate.
We may be small in numbers, but our voice is heard very powerfully, and we work hard to be sure that Alaskans are served well.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
the Quality Inn and Suites on Spinard, close to the airport in downtown Anchorage, offering Wi-Fi, a hot continental breakfast, and a 24-hour airport shuttle. Reservations at 243-3131.
And by
the 2013 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com.
The 28th session of the Alaska State Legislature is underway. Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell gaveled in the House of Representatives a few minutes after 1 p.m.
The House of Representatives assembled here for the first regular session of the 28th Legislature is hereby called to order.
The Senate gaveled in at 2 p.m. The Lieutenant Governor administered the oath of office to all House and Senate members. 12 legislators had not previously served.
Faithfully discharge my duties as state representative
to the best of my ability.
The first day of the 90-day session is largely ceremonial, and Treadwell took time to note a 100th year milestone for Alaska.
Come March 3 of this year, it will be a century that the Alaska legislature, beginning in territorial times, has convened to carry out the democratic ideal of protecting the liberty, promoting the health, welfare, safety, education, and prosperity of Alaskans. You, the group just sworn in, are the centennial class of the Alaska Legislature.
Some committees begin their work tomorrow, but the big event is Governor Sean Parnell's State of the State speech at 7 p.m. tomorrow evening. The annual speech is his chance to announce his major priorities for the session. I sat down with Governor Parnell today to talk about those priorities. He wasn't ready to give away any specifics on the new oil tax reform proposal that will top his agenda, but he says after his defeat on his oil tax plan last session, his administration did a lot of homework.
We spent a lot of time understanding the issue of declining production, understanding why it occurs. We took a lot of time understanding the current tax system, but you're going to see us move forward with a completely new proposal, but a more simple proposal.
So I'm sure that you don't want us to steal your thunder for the State of the State address, but can you give us an idea of how some of those lessons that you talked about will be reflected in this new proposal?
We do expect that our new legislation will be right across the floor tomorrow, and we're really working to make sure that this new proposal is fair to Alaskans, that it is really focused on production. We have a system right now that is focused, for instance, with the tax credits on spending. So the state is writing about $1 billion effectively in checks for those tax credits every year. Those tax credits don't necessarily lead to new production. And so our proposal will really focus more on new production rather than company spending in Alaska.
It sounds like you've put a lot of thought into sort of revising how you're going to go about this. Are you? Does that lend itself to a bigger sense of optimism about how this may go in this session?
Well, certainly I'm asking legislators to kind of park the prejudices of the past proposals, because I actually had made several, and take a fresh look with new eyes, because I think we all agree that the system at high prices, or most of us agree, the system at high prices means we're falling behind other jurisdictions, and we're not getting the company investment here, and we're continuing this decline. And Alaska's resources are so vast, and that oil belongs to Alaskans, and it needs to benefit Alaskans, not stay locked in the ground.
Another big topic in the legislature, and certainly the Democrats talked about that this morning, is education. Classroom funding has been essentially flat for 3 years. And because of that, the Anchorage School District is going through huge budget cuts right now that they're talking and implementing. Do you think we need a new approach to education funding?
You know, it's interesting to hear that characterization when we're spending more on education today than we ever have. And when the proposal that I put before them continues that funding. So there are internal cost pressures and drivers that the districts experience, but really what we're focused on is what results are being produced for our kids. And, you know, as a parent who put our kids through both public schools and private schools in the state, as parents, we wanted to know that our kids were learning. And so the focus on education spending has to be on the results achieved for the kids and for the parents of those children. So I think we're going to have a discussion over results and what the spending will achieve for our young people and the families.
Governor, beyond the issue with oil and education, what are your other priorities for the upcoming session?
Another important area to this state has to do with our fight against the epidemic of domestic violence, sexual assault, and trafficking. And you're going to see comprehensive legislation come forward that will, sponsored by me and our office, our administration, to strengthen protections for victims and survivors of these crimes that will increase penalties related to them. We're going to provide more investigative tools for law enforcement and tougher sentencing for perpetrators. So you will see a continued focus beyond what we released in the budget. We said we're going to fund more village public safety officers. I'm keeping my promise to do that, as well as some more tools through legislation.
Governor Parnell speaking at his Capitol office today. APRN will provide Gavel Alaska's live coverage of the speech to all Alaska public radio stations at 7 p.m. tomorrow evening. Over the past week, freshman legislators have been settling into their new digs in Juneau. But while the Capitol building is stately, that doesn't mean the transition from private citizen to public official is necessarily glamorous, as Wasilla Republican Lynn Gaddis is learning. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez has this story.
It's 11 a.m. on a rainy Juneau Saturday, and Representative Lynn Gaddis is moving into her new office when the phone rings. It's not a constituent calling with concerns, it's a customer who's wondering how to pick up a bale of hay from her farm. When she left the Matsu Valley for the legislative session, she also left behind a couple of major business operations. She still needs to keep them up even though she'll be hundreds of miles away for the next 3 months. The first step is just getting the phones configured.
When they dial into my business number, it'll say for Representative Gaddis, press, I don't know, I think it's a press 3, and it dials right into my front desk. For the aviation calls, press this, which will forward to my husband. For the hay calls, press this. And it will depend if I am in district and can help them, if it's after hours, so on and so forth.
Gaddis is one of 9 brand new legislators in the House and had only been to Juneau a couple of times before getting elected. But she's long been involved in Alaska politics and was secretary of the state Republican Party a few years back. Most recently, she served on the Matsu Valley School Board. Now she's chair of the House Education Committee and in a serious position to affect school policy around the state.
I do intend to shake things up. As a lifelong Alaskan, there are other things I could be doing, and I'm not. I came here to get a job done.
But before she tries to do that, she needs to get her office furniture ordered.
Okay, and maybe they did order a desk, but we've been so busy, my guess is we may not have.
Okay. And as so once that's taken care of, mm-hmm. and then as far as getting in here and doing this.
As a member of the House majority, Gaddis gets a 3-person staff. But since she has no seniority, her office isn't spacious. She's also not sure what equipment she's getting.
I ask maintenance. I guess there's 100 folks, and since I am a freshman, I'm probably sure I'm number 100 as far as they're getting to me. So we'll see how that works.
The biggest hassles so far haven't been in the Capitol building, but outside of it. It took Gaddis a while to locate the Suburban she ferried out for the session. And anyway, she's worried that it won't fit into the tiny parking spot she was assigned. She hasn't received mail in a week. And the accommodations she's found aren't exactly as cozy as her home in the valley. Housing is tight in Juneau, and it's hard to find an apartment to sublet. So like a lot of legislators, Gaddis will be living in a hotel this session, and it's not the Ritz by any stretch. But she's gotten the perk of getting her new exercise regime kickstarted.
Yeah, I started that out. Dragging three suitcases up to the third floor, got up there, that room wasn't ready, went down to the hotel, they switched me to another building, again, third floor, down go the three, up go the three, and I was like, whoa. They said, whoops, we're going to bring you down one floor, but we're going to shampoo the carpet tomorrow, so don't unpack anything. I was like, sure, no problem. So anyway, started work the very next day and started training.
Despite the growing pains, Gaddis is happy to be here. She got her state legislator pin on Friday at a reception that felt a little bit like a college mixer. This weekend, she had it on her lapel and was showing it off. Yesterday, she officially stepped down from her local school board so she could direct the education committee without any conflict of interest. And today, she was sworn in. It's a pretty big change.
I'm not exactly sure that it's hit me yet.
But with the oath of office behind her, she's pretty sure that soon, it will. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the U.S. House strips Alaska fisheries aid from a disaster relief bill.
No way we were going to be able to tack that fishery money onto Sandy. It wasn't going to fly in the House.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Rasmussen Foundation announces a March 1st deadline to apply for individual artist awards, which provide funding directly to artists to support their creative work. Learn more by participating in one of their informational teleconferences to be held in January. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Things have changed a lot for Democrats this legislative session. They are in the minority in both the House and the Senate. I spoke with House Minority Leader Beth Kurtula and Senate Minority Leader Johnny Ellis this morning to ask about that change and their agenda for the session. Ellis says Democrats are energized to fight the governor's oil tax reform proposal.
There's $20 billion at stake. There's $20 billion on the table. The governor has a proposal to give that to the oil industry with no strings attached over the next 10 years. And that could, according to his OMB director, put us immediately into deficit spending. That puts our roads, our schools, our public safety potentially at risk. And so the stakes are very high. The discussions and debate will be very intense. But you can expect the Democrats to comport themselves with civility on principled stands. That are in line with a defense of the Alaska Constitution. But that's really what it's all about. $20 billion on the table. That's our birthright. That's our common property resource. Alaska's future is at stake in this session more than any before that I've ever seen.
And Representative Kurtula, how would you characterize the changes that have come about for the Democrats in this session?
We have four new members in the House Democratic Caucus. We have one of the youngest members to ever serve, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, out of rural Southeast. And the energy that these four new members bring into the legislature is just phenomenal. But in terms of education, in terms of inflation proofing, class size, you know, being sure that parents can help their children succeed, being sure that we have strong trade schools, that we get kids the education they need to lead Alaska forward, those ideas and that fundamental belief comes from Democrats. So I feel great about starting this session. It's just going to be a good year. Doesn't mean it's not going to be hard work. It also doesn't mean we don't have a tremendous challenge with what the governor is suggesting and the enormous cut in our revenues if it happens. So, but we're ready to go. You've got a strong team.
I listened into the press conference that you had earlier and did hear you reiterate several times that it is a strong caucus. But you're in the minority. How can you parlay that strong caucus into leverage with the governor and with the majority?
Well, the change in leadership in the Senate is mostly due to a gerrymandered reapportionment that the court has thrown out and sent back to the drawing board. So the people of Alaska didn't change their view on the oil wealth giveaway. So our ideas are still out there. Our strength and our experience and our ideas and our support among the public is still there, regardless of some of the rejiggering of the leadership positions in the Senate. So we take strength from that, from our position on oil taxes and on education. We're Democrats. Education and energy are the key elements to the future of the state. And for us, that means affordable energy for Alaskans across the state, particularly in Fairbanks and in rural Alaska always, and then getting a fair share, a good business deal for our oil wealth to run the state, to energize our state. So energy in two different aspects is paramount. And then education. Democrats have always believed in public education. Public education is under attack in this state. Some benign neglect and then also some outright attack. And so we want more accountability. We want more better results from our public schools. But we also want adequate funding for our public schools. And the governor and the majority have not recommended any new funding for the base student allocation in nearly 3 years. Some one-time funding that's wholly inadequate. And to make any progress with the future of the state through education, the great ladder of opportunity for people to rise up, to get off of welfare, to support their families, education is that key. So for us, as a progressive agenda for this session, energy and education are the key to Alaska's future.
Representative Kurtula?
When Senator Ellis was talking, it made me remember why my grandparents came to Alaska. They came out of poverty, out of the middle of the Depression, so their children could get an education. And more than anything today, that's the thing I worry about. So we may be small in numbers, but our voice is heard very powerfully, and we work hard to be sure that Alaskans are served well.
You've both talked about being very energized, that you have a strong caucus. During the press conference, you said something about they may outnumber us, but we have them surrounded. It sort of sounds like you're gearing up for a fight. Would you characterize it that way?
You can call it a fight. Yes, there will be a fight over ideas. The Democrats are ready. We want to see more oil in our pipeline. Because that's where the oil wealth comes from to run our state and energize our state. We are partners with the oil industry and give a lot of money and tax credits. And we're willing to give even more of a partnership with the oil industry to have drilling in Alaska that benefits us and puts oil in the pipeline. But if you take $20 billion of ours out of our treasury and send it to the coast of Africa to benefit not Alaskans, or the Alaskan Treasury, but to benefit the shareholders of British Petroleum, Exxon, or ConocoPhillips, that's a chump deal. That's a sucker's deal. And we would be remiss in our oath to the Constitution. We would be violating our oath to the Alaska Constitution if we voted for a bill that had no strings attached and gave away $20 billion of the future of Alaska to multinational corporations that are highly profitable. We will do a partnership. We will give tax breaks to have drilling in Alaska, but tax breaks for drilling off the coast of Africa, no way.
Johnny Ellis is Senate Minority Leader, and Beth Kurtula is the House Minority Leader. The U.S. House has stripped a relief bill of money for the fishery disaster in Alaska. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, the outlook is not much better in the Senate.
The House passed the second round of an aid package earlier this evening. It passed an extension of the flood insurance program earlier this month. Most of the money in today's bill will be sent to the Northeast states devastated by Hurricane Sandy that struck in the fall. Republicans in the House whittled away at the fishery disaster money in the bill.
I was not surprised, and very frankly, it probably didn't belong in this bill.
Representative Don Young voted for it anyway. Republicans in the House cut funding for fishery disasters in Alaska, Mississippi, and the Gulf Coast from $150 million down to just $5 million. And now the money will just go to the Northeast, something Congressman Young says is the right thing to do.
No way that we were going to be able to tack that fishery money onto Sandy. And the Senate did that, yes, but it wasn't going to fly in the House.
The Senate did that in December. But the House failed to act on it before the last Congress finished its term, so any work up to that point was rendered moot. And now it's the Senate's turn to pass the House bill. Senator Mark Begich, who initially requested $45 million in fishery aid for the state, says he'll likely vote for whatever comes to the Senate.
The process now in this country is you may have a disaster. If it's declared, we may or may not help you, but fend for yourself. That's not how this country is built.
Both Senator Begich and Congressman Young say the money will have to go through the normal appropriations process later this year, meaning Congress will have to fund the appropriate agencies at a level that can pay for the disaster aid. But that could be a tall order. The Senate has not passed a budget in 3 years. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by Older Persons Action Group, promoting well-being for Alaska seniors and their families, including publication of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper. Membership information at 1-800-478-1059. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2013 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give or contributing to a college savings plan. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
A long-anticipated rewrite of Anchorage Land Use Law, also known as Title 21, is set to come before the Anchorage Assembly tonight. Public hearings are expected to be lively. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
Anchorage Assembly member Debbie Osiander has been working on Title 21 in one way or another for nearly a decade. Osiander is about to term out of her seat representing Chugiak Eagle River, and the rewrite is at the top of her to-do list. She chairs a committee preparing it for the Assembly to consider.
Well, I'm looking at my document here, and it's about 5 inches thick. I don't know the number of pages.
A lot,
yeah.
In the end, the 14-chapter document ended up being nearly 800 pages long. In 2010, the Assembly provisionally adopted the majority of the chapters. Then Mayor Dan Sullivan came into office and said he wanted a review of the whole thing. Once the review was done, Sullivan sent it to the Planning and Zoning Commission with some proposed amendments. In 2012, Osiander's committee went to work on it. What was produced, Osiander says, is an incredibly complex document.
Basically, we're dealing with every single city law relating to land use and zoning and how building is regulated in this town.
At first glance, the updated version does a lot to meet many goals of Anchorage 2020. It allows mixed use in some zoning districts under certain conditions. It requires more sidewalks and walkways in areas that previously were not pedestrian-friendly. It makes changes to limit cookie-cutter developments and requires that landscaping be included in condominium plans instead of just slabs of cement for parking. Sean Debenham works in commercial real estate development. He recently helped draft a 16-page letter detailing the concerns of the Building Owners and Managers Association, or BOMA. He says the Title 21 revision goes too far.
You know, in theory, it sounds great. Hey, let's require wider sidewalks. Let's require park benches and nicer facades. Let's require snow storage. Let's require, you know, all these different items. But that comes at a price, and that price is it costs more to develop. You know, if it costs a developer 10% more, well, that 10% has to go someplace, so that gets passed on to the users.
He says the rewrite as it stands is sure to limit the construction of affordable housing because it would put too many constraints on developers. But some Anchorage residents say the revision does not go far enough. John Weddleton is one of them. He helps coordinate the nonprofit Anchorage Citizens Coalition, formed in the 90s, to make Anchorage a more livable city. He says the rewrite is too lax on developers, sacrificing natural spaces and livability for cost. One area in the Title 21 revision that he's concerned about is new rules for mixed-use development. He prefers the provisionally adopted version.
The provisionally adopted version had three levels of mixed use, and each one was more appropriate for the setting. So you could do mixed use, but it would be in a neighborhood, but it would be fairly small. And to just pretend that you can do one type of mixed use, allow kind of the maximum level everywhere, is very risky for Anchorage.
Weddleton also says he's concerned about stream setbacks of just 25 feet. He'd prefer what the Assembly adopted provisionally earlier, which required 50-foot stream setbacks. Weddleton says these changes lead straight back to attorney Dan Coffey, who was hired by Mayor Sullivan in 2010 to do a review of Title 21 as a consultant. He provided that review in 2011. The Planning and Zoning Commission took many of his recommendations and passed them on to the Title 21 Committee. Weddleton alleges that the committee followed those recommendations closely instead of looking to the Anchorage 2020 plan developed by the citizens of Anchorage.
Their guiding effort was Dan Coffey's proposals. It wasn't the Anchorage 2020 plan. It wasn't the input from people for 8 years prior. It was Dan Coffey and his comments. That's what they followed as they went through and recommended changes.
Oceander says that's not true and that Coffey has not been involved with her committee's work. Besides being an attorney, Dan Coffey has served on the Anchorage Assembly and on the Planning and Zoning Commission. He's also involved in commercial real estate development. Coffey admits he owns 6 commercial properties in Anchorage, but refutes the allegations.
On some instances, they took my recommendations. On others, they did not.
All chapters of Title 21 go before the Anchorage Assembly at Tuesday's regular meeting, where the body will hear public testimony. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The retired U.S. Coast Guard cutter Storrs was recently added to the National Register of Historic Places, perhaps bolstering its chances of becoming a museum on Juneau's downtown waterfront. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
The listing doesn't guarantee anything, but Joe Geldof with the nonprofit Storrs Museum and Educational Center says it's another step toward bringing the ship to the capital city.
It's an acknowledgement that the Storrs is a truly historic ship worthy of preservation and protection.
The Storrs is currently mothballed at a shipyard in California. Since being decommissioned in 2007, Alaska's congressional delegation has made several attempts to transfer ownership of it to the museum group. Geldof thinks this is the year it finally clears the political gridlock in Washington, D.C.
Things seem to be breaking free, so we're optimistic that in 2013 Congress will come through and authorize transfer.
The Storrs is a medium-endurance cutter launched in 1942 and originally assigned to the North Atlantic during World War II. The ship was officially added to the National Register of Historic Places on December 31st. Geldof says the listing may help the museum group with fundraising when and if ownership is transferred. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly from Juneau. We're closing tonight's show with sound of the Alaska Youth Choir practicing the Alaska flag song in the entrance of the state capitol. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton in Anchorage and Casey Kelly in Juneau. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers were Dave Waldron in Anchorage and Andy Klein in Juneau. Josh Edge is our web producer. Thanks to KTOO and Juneau for making our broadcast from the capital city possible for the last 2 days. I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company welcoming Clare House residents to their new home. Learn more at cssalaska.org.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.